Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, Episode 62, Jews and Christians Rooting for Catholics, recorded Wednesday, November 21st, 2012. What a crazy week in college football, and the SEC was the big benefactor. Shane Bailey, Blair Smiley, and Britton Burton discuss how Kansas State and Oregon's losses impact the BCS. They also take a look at the coaching rumors and try to rank the possible openings and how the news at Auburn might change things. The roundtable also looks at what impact the news from the Big Ten has on the SEC. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. And welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back for another episode of SEC Sports Roundtable. That's a little redundant right there. I just realized that. But it's a podcast about the SEC. We talk a little bit about the week that happened, that's already been, the week that's going to happen coming up. Starting Friday, we have games this week, as well as some news. And I think this week we've got a lot of news to talk about. So that's going to take a big portion of the podcast, especially since last week's games were prep games for a lot of the SEC coming up for their rivalry week. And with me tonight, Britton Burton, welcome back. Been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. Grad school's keeping me from being on the podcast too often, but I'm glad to be here today.
Well, I think you picked a good week to finally make it.
Yeah, I have good timing.
Yeah, imagine that. And for those that don't know about the podcast, we're a little different than Talking Heads or, those on some of the other radio stations. We're going to be more on the lines of someone that Britton might be fond of, Paul Feinbaum. He's not afraid to admit who he's for. And that's about all we take from him and his show. We do not allow his callers on our show. I would have to put a shotgun to my head if that was the case. And XM better not call and ask us to take callers, or I'd have to turn them down. But we do have allegiance here to our teams, and we're not afraid to speak of that and talk about the programs that we root for. And the other side of this tripod of hosts tonight's Blair Smiley. And if you're watching on YouTube, we do a video version of this on YouTube. We do a Google Hangout, so you're always welcome to follow along, watch this live or after the fact. But you can definitely tell by Blair's lower third tonight who he's for.
Yes.
So welcome to the podcast, Blair Smiley.
Good to be here. Go to hell, Ole Miss. Sorry.
So what's the over-under of that tonight?
I'll keep it to a minimum.
All right. Well, let's get right into things. I think we were doing some pre-show prep here, talking about some things to look at, and really, most of the games last week are of little relevance because most of the programs, if you look at who they were up against, it was prep week for like I said, the rivalry games that are set to happen here. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of games last week of some importance, and we'll just start with somebody that Blair's going to be ready to see Sunday, and that's Ole Miss. And they actually were holding their own against LSU this weekend, or last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I think everybody was pretty shocked that they played as well as they did. And it's just another, unfortunately for them, it was another, fourth quarter kind of run out of gas. Everything kind of catches up to them. Type of game, just like they did with Texas A&M and Vanderbilt, where got into the fourth quarter and 89-yard punt return by Odell Beckham that brought back horror. I guess for Ole Miss fans, it was basically like a repeat of 1959 and Billy Cannon's run.
Ghost of Billy Cannon.
Yeah, so
they were even showing that on the. On the show, the game after almost immediately after it happened, like they had that queued up waiting for it to show it.
Yeah, and yeah. So for Ole Miss people, it's been haunting them for 50 plus years. So to see that in that close of a game and for the tie, and then for them to you know, give up there in the last minute and give up the touchdown and the loss. It's a pretty tough deal, but hey, they came to play, and you know, Ole Miss, we kind of figured that out this year. You know, they can, their offense can move the ball if you're not really prepared for it. It's an up tempo game, and in you know, a lot of times it's just the problem is that the they're low on the scholarship numbers, so their depth just to, you know, typically catches up to them in some of the higher profile games. But hey, to be at 5 wins is a whole lot better than what most people thought, and an opportunity to get to a bowl game this weekend.
And then another program that stayed in the SEC last week, I think it was a prep game for them. Had a little trouble, I think, in the first half. It was pretty close, and Arkansas actually had the lead on your Bulldogs for most of the first half there. But late in the first half, you guys got that field goal, then the touchdown, and then started to never look back. But you know, one thing I noticed, and I'm going to let you talk about it, Blair, because I know you're ready to do that, but you know, Mississippi State was making a few mistakes there, and that's not what they need to be doing with this game coming up Saturday. I don't know why I keep wanting to say Sunday here, but against Ole Miss, and that's not the kind of prep game you really wanted to see, even though the score didn't reflect it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing was is that they didn't actually turn the ball over, which but they just didn't play well that first quarter, and it was really basically from a defensive standpoint. I mean, if you have seen what we've done against Alabama and Texas A&M and LSU, you know, really going into that game was a win that desperately needed us to kind of get back and kind of right the ship. And, you know, I had a feeling going into the game that, that I, you know, if you've seen the history of Mississippi State and Arkansas, I mean, we've lost 12 out of the last 13. I think we've beaten them 4 times now, a total. So they just kind of have our number. And to watch that first quarter, it was not looking as a good day, I guess you could say. But you know, they did, you know, got down 14-7, made some adjustments finally on defense. I think Tyler Wilson started out 11 of 12 with 2 touchdowns, and then State rolled off 38 straight points to kind of put the game away. But really, it was Arkansas. I think if you watch that game, it was their season just kind of wrapped up into a hole. I mean, they had the game. They had to control the game. It's 14-7, and a kid's trying to catch a fair punt, and he just muffs it. You know, we end up getting a field goal, and then, you know, next thing you know, in the second half, they got 4 turnovers, and, you know, he scored 21 straight points in about 8 minutes and off of 3 straight turnovers. And so it was kind of the way Arkansas has played this year. And if you look at their numbers, that was the thing that was scary. I mean, Tyler Wilson was having a pretty decent year if you looked at numbers and statistics and those types of things. It's just they turned the ball over so much, you know, compared to what they did last year. And so for Mississippi State, it was a good – I think it was the most complete game we had played because we made adjustments after the first 2 series and really kind of shut them down and stopped that offense that can kind of get going. And we shut Kobe Hamilton down after, you know, the first quarter where he dominated, and then Tyler Russell obviously got going, and he's been kind of doing that all year. You know, 21 touchdowns and 4 picks. You know, he's pretty efficient. So I like the way we finished the game going into this week. I felt like when we went into this game, Shane and Britton, what basically I had a feeling that if State won, I felt like it could boost them to win the Egg Bowl and the bowl game and go get that 10 win. I felt if they lost, they were looking at 7-6, you know, first 7 wins and, you know, just kind of things kind of spiraling out of control. So it's a big win, kind of get a blowout like you needed. And then to head into this week, which is, you know, always an important week for Dan Mullen and the way he's established this rivalry.
I'm sorry there. I was in the middle of something. I apologize. You're so long-winded sometimes. I thought I could just get away with something there. And but it was a good assessment, and I know that I didn't get to watch the whole game, but I didn't consider it a complete performance. Like I said, I saw some sloppiness on Mississippi State's part, and the way Ole Miss played against LSU, they're going to need some opportunities, and if you give them to them, like you did Arkansas, I think they would be a program that would have the opportunity to respond a little better than Arkansas has this year.
I think you're right, yeah.
But we'll talk a little bit more about that game here in just a little bit as we look at the week that's coming up. But the last game that pitted two SEC opponents basically was the nail in the coffin for a coach, and that was the Van Britton's over there smiling.
James Franklin's the coach killer.
He is a coach killer. Kentucky week one week, Vanderbilt beats Kentucky and Joker's gone. Beats Tennessee. Dooley's gone. You know, though, we'll talk a little bit. Did you guys watch that game, Britton? Did you see the game?
I was glued to Oregon, Stanford, and Kansas State, Baylor. And normally I would love to watch Vanderbilt destroy Tennessee, but I was glued to the other two because of what it meant for my team, so I didn't really watch any of it.
Well, what it really did was it made it easier to watch those other games, because if that one was close – SEC fans would have been more in tune to watch that game, just because of the rivalry that is, you know, UT and Vandy. But it wasn't close. Vandy did a great job with that game. Did you watch it, Blair?
Yeah, I did. I mean, you know, the frustrating part, man, if you watch that first half, I mean, it's just, you know, Vanderbilt did everything for two quarters to, you know, to kind of just – do the kind of Vanderbilt thing. It was frustrating and not really put their stamp, and they were dominating the game really. But they just couldn't, they couldn't score in the red zone, and they were, you know, making stuff. And I really loved what Franklin did after the half, where, I mean, he just basically put everything on the line. And, you know, when you saw those three play calls to come out of the half, you go three plays, 85 yards, you know, it was, you knew then and there that it was on and it was fixing to be a beat down. And, you know, and as a Tennessee fan, I mean, it's just got to be disheartening to see the way Tyler Bray played. I mean, acted like he didn't care that he was anywhere in the stadium. You know, he wasn't even close on throws. You know, and what it's got to be is that, you know, last year it was the same thing that happened that Kentucky game, where you could actually tell that those young guys, they didn't want to go to the Liberty Bowl or the Music City Bowl. They just wanted to bail out. And, you know, they just wanted to go home. And that's really what I felt like happened. I felt like they didn't really want to fight and go to a Liberty Bowl. And I think that's what they were actually doing. So it's got to be frustrating from a Tennessee standpoint. But for Vandy, I mean, that's about as good as you can get. I mean, 30 years that it's happened in Nashville, and to put the staple that you put on it like Franklin did, kind of handle it the way you did, I liked it.
And also, though, I mean, you look at the way Bray reacted when he was pulled. He was nonchalant. He really didn't care. I mean, you would have wanted to see a quarterback have a little more emotion than that.
And that was so puzzling because, I mean, that was – you know, Dooley, you're fighting for your job. You haven't lost it yet, even though most people would say you have. But to pull Tyler Bray after all the stuff that's happened, and to pull him in the first half like he did, was just absolutely didn't make any sense. It was very puzzling. You could tell.
Except if you looked at his numbers, was he like 9 of 17? I think when they pulled him.
I understand that, but the problem was that he's never stood up to him for 3 years.
Right, you can't let that.
And then all of a sudden he's going to go, oh, I'm going to go draw a line here in the game that I need.
In my final game.
When I guarantee you that Shoup or whatever, however you say his last name for Vanderbilt, that dude started partying whenever he saw the other quarterback roll in. Because if you ask him, they would much rather see the second quarterback than Tyler Bray, just because of the physical talents that were there. I mean, it didn't make any sense. And I think he forced his hand. I think he did that too early, because, I mean, the game wasn't out of control. You're just having a bad half. Get into the third quarter. If, you know, he's still going throwing like he is, then you maybe go to that, make that move. But, you know, and then, you know, your backup quarterback slings an interception, you know, his third pass or whatever it is, and, you know, it's over with.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that hurts Bray's chances to go into the draft this year?
I think Bray's got issues already before even that game this season. You know, there's been rumblings about his behavioral issues, whether it is...
I mean, it started in the spring with beer bottles on the car.
Yeah, and, you know, there's all kinds of report about, you know, him and liking the smoke in the tree, you know, all that good stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, he's got some issues.
There's off-the-field stuff, and then, you know, the on-the-field stuff. I mean, yeah, he's got the arm, but I think there's just a ton of red flags because he seems to shrink in big moments, and you see how he has such huge maturity problems and lack of leadership. And I'm not touching him with a 10-foot pole if I'm a GM.
You know, I'm telling – if I'm a GM, I'm asking him, you know, hey, you got 23 SEC games and you're 4-19. Explain that to me.
Right.
When you got pretty much two, you know, first-round wide receivers and offensive line that most of them are going to be playing in the NFL. I mean, they got like six guys that are going to be playing in the NFL that are in their starting 11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Zach Rogers, I would actually put up against any third wide receiver in the SEC.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing how terrible production they've gotten out of that offensive unit.
Well, that also kind of shows how bad they were defensively.
Defensively, it's crazy. I mean, it's kind of comical that Sari gets to keep his job and Dooley doesn't get to coach.
Yeah.
But that was another deal for another day. But it's just crazy. But it's great for Vandy. I mean, you know, you're talking about, you know, I don't know if you had a chance to read the SEC blog this week, and they broke down a lot of the stuff that were happening. I know James Franklin, you know, he's back there going, hey, you know, one day it's not going to be the first thing we've done this and the first thing since 82 and the first time that we've done this since 1916. You know, he's wanting to kind of get past all that, but they're doing some monumental things. And so definitely good from a Vanderbilt standpoint.
Well, that kind of goes into the next subject I wanted to touch upon, and that's the coaching carousel that's going to be the SEC. You know, as a Kentucky fan, we've got our own issues with trying to find a head coach. But that's the last thing I really wanted to see was another coach at UT, because by all indications, at least from talk radio in the Nashville area, I said this off air, you know, they're draining the kitchen sink because they're going to throw everything at whoever they can get, because they're going to some deep pockets and are going to have to get a big quality name here to take Dooley's place. And there's some big names out there. Let's just throw it out there. How valid do you think the fact that Gruden's looking at this job?
Well, I think this is what my thought is. I don't think Gruden's coming, number one, but I am surprised that his name is stayed out here long enough. And I think it has to do with the NFL really isn't in the time frame to kind of get heated up, because there hadn't been any moves made. But I think when you take out the consideration that, you know, Philadelphia is going to be there, Oakland's going to be there, San Diego's probably going to be there, Cleveland's probably going to be there. There are some big time NFL.
What about St. Louis?
St. Louis.
Have you not heard the Jeff Fisher to UT rumor?
There's no telling. I can tell you this.
I've heard Jeff Fisher to Auburn because his son's there. That's a good reason to go.
I can tell you this, that from all indications, you know, especially with some of those reports that you hear in the last 48 hours with the 8-year package with obscene money, especially when you got columnists from the Commercial Appeal who have had a history of not being very positive toward UT that are giving Gruden stuff credence, makes you kind of pause for a second. I just don't think he's going to, you know, we don't even know if he's actually going to be good in college because he's been so long. But, you know, the other thing is, and I'm getting a little long-winded on this, Shane, but, I mean, you know, you hear all the other stuff about a Jimbo Fisher or a Bob Stoops or some of those names, you know, and I was sitting there last night, you know, you tell me of the top 15 programs in the country outside of Ohio State and Urban Meyer basically taking the year off and then transplanting up there. Tell me those 15 programs, the coach that they have right now, and he came from a big-time program that you pulled away. I mean, Alabama, you basically had a Nick Saban that had proven on the college level and really wasn't a fit for the NFL. So it made sense for them at the time. So he didn't go from – so my point is I don't really see
– So you're not going to – are you going to put South Carolina not in that top 15 with Spurrier?
But see, Spurrier, the problem with Spurrier – I wouldn't put him in the top 15, you're right, because I'm talking about – you're talking about an Oklahoma going to a Tennessee. So you're talking about a top 20 program going to a top 20 program.
Right.
You know, basically,
and not only that, but a top 20 program that you're the top dog, or at least 1A and 1B in your conference, and now you're going to go to, you know, number 6 in the conference.
Yeah,
that just doesn't compute to me.
I mean, that, I don't understand. You know, like the Jimbo Fisher, you know, he's mad or he's not very happy. Well, how happy is he? I mean, is he not happy because his AD hasn't like stroked his back and told him he's the greatest thing ever? Or is he willing to, you know, pick up and move and go to the SEC? That, I just don't – I think I find it hard to do that. And people say, hey, money talks. But I just don't – I don't think that – I think that's going to be very difficult. And I think that's what Tennessee, you know
– they faced that – they faced that a couple of years ago when they got Dooley.
Well, the problem was there was you the timing of that was even worse because that was in January.
Because Kiffin,
you know, you weren't
Kiffin just up and hey, by the way, I'm gone.
Right, but I think I think if Kiffin would have done that in November, I think they would have had different candidates. I think they were in a point where they didn't have the options available to them that you normally have in late November and in December. This was, you know, this had actually turned. I mean, they were trying. I mean, JUCO kids were coming to school, and they were trying to get them not to enroll, if you remember. So, I mean, it was really late in the process. So, that's my thought is I don't know. And I think if I was a Tennessee fan, I would be worried that this Gruden thing picks up legs, and it becomes a Peyton Manning to Tennessee Titans type of thing that grows, and then it doesn't happen because I think the likelihood is not happening.
Yeah.
And then you got a disappointment, and then you got to re-energize the fan base from that standpoint. And I think Tennessee's got to make the right hire to get that program. They can't make another bad hire.
And Britton, I'll get your thoughts on this, but I'll say one thing before I'll hand it over to you for a second. The one thing that gives me pause about that whole Gruden scenario, and I've given no credence to it. Until, you know, recently I heard a guy from 24/7 Sports, and those guys have, you know, some connections that folks like me and you two, you know, we don't have. We don't have any contact with coaches or folks in the circles. And Gruden's reached out to a couple of folks, and this has been confirmed, you know, that he's reached out to some folks to possibly build a staff.
Yeah.
And that shows to me that if that's really true, then there is some truth to this, and I don't like that truth because he and name alone can bring in recruits. Now, the other thing that gives me pause about that, though, and in a good way, that I don't think he can be serious about this, is the difference between the NFL and college is that the NFL, there's some downtime. And with Gruden being off the last couple of years and having it pretty easy, He's whether he's completely intent and 24/7 go or not, he's still going to have some of that. Man, this is nice having some of this downtime. Where when you get into college, by playing in the BCS game, you actually are at somewhat of a disadvantage on the recruiting field because you're not able to recruit for a week or two that you're preparing for a football game. So, you know, it doesn't stop because the second that game's over, you're out on the recruiting field. And so, you know, there are some coaches that love that. I don't know if Gruden's that type of guy. He's more the X's and O's kind of guy, in my opinion. And can he be that recruiter that's out there visiting families, you know, in January and February and never stopping? Britton, I'll go on to get your opinion on it. But that's my – from a Tennessee standpoint, if I were Tennessee, that would be the biggest concern to say, well, let's look at what are his strengths. And that's something that would play against that strength to me.
Yeah, and there, so from the people that do interviews that you know have worked with Gruden or know Gruden, you tend to hear a lot that those people say, I don't think he would like the recruiting aspect of things.
Exactly.
And then also today, I don't know if either of you heard Chris Mortensen on local radio saying that Gruden, with Monday Night Football and all the different endorsements and things that he does now, he's making north of $15 million a year right now.
Did you say $15 million?
That was what Mortensen was guessing. He said he knows it's north of 10, and he thinks it's more like
holy mackerel,
20. So that means that Tennessee, no matter what they're willing to pay, they can't pay him more to pry him away. And, yeah, maybe he's got that coaching bug, that itch, and he wants to get back in the game. But he's got a pretty sweet gig right now to still have his fingers in football and to live and breathe football. Well, to be involved in football but not live and breathe it like a coach has to, and, you know, the – being up till midnight and coming into the office at 5 a.m. And I don't know. I know it's picking up steam a little, but I'm still very much in the I'll believe it when I see it mode.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that you got to think about, number one, is he building a staff for college or is it NFL?
That was my thoughts too.
So you don't really know that. I mean, I think that's pretty well documented that he's had feelers out with regard to that. And he just got finished being paid by the Bucks like last year. So he was receiving his buyout that he got to leave the Bucks up until like the last 6 months or something. So that's why all this is kind of heated up, because if he went back into coaching, he could still get that money while doing his media, side of things. But it's going to be interesting. You know, if I'm a Tennessee fan, I mean, who do y'all think? You know, if I'm a Tennessee fan, and Shane, we've had this conversation with Drew, you know, Drew, all he's known growing up is, you know, the 90s, the late 80s, the 90s, kind of the latest run of Tennessee. And, you know, you're looking at 16, 17, 18-year-old kids. I think Tennessee needs a guy to come in that's going to rebrand Tennessee. He's going to re-image what Tennessee is, because the 16, 17, 18-year-old, they don't really know what the Peyton Manning era was or the 98 championship, because it's 13 years ago. They weren't even alive. And so I think sometimes that's what kind of gets bypassed on it. And so I think in today's environment, they definitely need that. So I think they got the right guy. I think Dave Hart, is the right guy for him. You could just tell by his press conference. But, you know, Tennessee's got a lot of other issues from the academic standpoint that has caused a lot of rift. And when you see that they've actually had, 12 chancellors since 2000? I mean, that's the most insane thing I've ever heard of.
I hadn't heard that.
I didn't know that. Dave Hart said that in his conference. 12 presidents or chancellors since 2000. So you can kind of tell how the academic and athletic world isn't really kind of on the same page, and how things could have possibly got a little bit sideways under Hamilton and the issues that they're dealing with from a compliance standpoint. So it's a tough gig, but it's a top 15 program still, I think.
I would say as far as facilities and dollars they can spend, but from where they are they haven't even been ranked in the top 25 at all this season. So I don't know if I'd give them that. I mean, because
I tell you what, Shane, just take this. Take Hugh Freeze. Hugh Freeze is in most people's terms a nobody when it comes to coaching. I mean, 7 years ago he was coaching women's basketball, high school basketball.
Chip Kelly was a coordinator in 07.
Right, and so he takes an Ole Miss team that, I mean, let's be honest, they were the worst football team in America last year.
I think me and you both gave them like 3 or 4 wins in our preseason picks.
I don't think you understand just the complete change of a culture, and especially in an environment that Tennessee's got some talent, dude. The coverage not bare like it was. So he's got it left in a foundation. I think things behind the scenes are going to be better than what it was, but a new start is going to be unbelievable. The problem is you don't have a Tyler Bray, a Justin Hunter, and a Cordell Patterson probably left over.
I think we'll go on to the next programs, but I think all four of them need to be looking for the same type of candidate. I do not think that flashy, high-paid coach is the right fit for any of these programs.
Right.
Look what, like I said, Chip Kelly did it at Oregon. He was a coordinator that had a good eye for it. I think that Kingsley guy down – is that his name? Down in A&M. You know, yeah. that splashy – yeah, that splashy offense. That's the type of guy that I think is going to provide excitement. Now, he might not provide the excitement that first day of a press conference, but when they get out there, they spread the field, they have some talent on there, and they're starting to score some points, things change real quick. I mean, look at James Franklin at Vanderbilt. They didn't dislike him, but they weren't like that was the perfect hire for Vanderbilt when they hired him. But he was the right guy because he provided the excitement, he provided the talent, and he provided the ability to get out there and recruit. Those are the three things that you really need today in all four of those programs we're talking about, whether it's Auburn, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee. Am I missing anybody that's going to be looking for a coach?
I think you're right, Shane. I mean, tell me, you know, with your what is really Kentucky? I mean, I'm hearing the Butch Jones rumor. I mean, is that
– from Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just not excited about that.
I mean, he's a good coach, man. If Kentucky gets Butch Jones, that's a – I think that's a slam dunk, man. I
could be off base, but I just don't see him provide – I don't know.
He was a Central Michigan guy, right?
Yeah, I think so. And then
because he was the Chip Kelly that went from Central Michigan over to Cincinnati and then went to Notre Dame, and then they went and plucked him, kind of the same scenario. But he's a real – I think he's good, and I think that's – and he's younger than you think he is.
Maybe that's it. I'm thinking he's old.
No. Nah.
You know, and Art Briles is another guy that somewhat been on the radar. I think from Baylor, you know, him making the jump to the SEC, he's been able to prove that he can recruit in Texas. He's got an exciting style of football. I think he would be a great fit for the SEC. Now, I don't know if you could get him over here from Baylor. But
yeah,
I think
that's the thing. I don't know if he actually fits the culture of the SEC. He's kind of an old school, but out of the box kind of a guy, and which I think you got to have at Kentucky. But kind of getting in the SEC, I think he kind of likes it out there in Texas and can be at Baylor and can do what he did against Kansas State. You know, run that offense and get athletes there locally that'll come to him.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's easier for them to come to go to Waco than it is to go to Lexington.
Right. In Texas, you can take the leftovers and still have some really good players on your team.
Yeah.
But you can also still recruit down there. And Lexington's not a bad place to go to college.
No, it's not like
Mississippi State. I mean, there's a lot more to do in Lexington than there is in Starkville.
Well, yeah, I understand that. But what I'm not saying that Lexington's not a bad place. I'm saying that when you're talking to a kid in Texas and getting him to go to Baylor – or getting him to go off to Lexington, it's just the distance. I mean that's kind of the whole thing. 80% of kids are going to go more locally than they'll go anywhere else. So getting them to go, hey, I'm going to go from Texas, where it's going to be cold half the year up in Lexington. You know, I mean, it's a different dynamic than just, hey, I can go down the road to Waco and be relatively close and family can see me and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to be that fringe guy that can't go to Texas or Texas A&M.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things. I don't think it has to do per se to Lexington, but I do like that shot at Starkville that you just threw out there. So I appreciate that.
I've been to both cities. And so I'm not saying Lexington's anything like Nashville or Atlanta or Gainesville, but I mean, it's not a bad city to go to school. And you've got a huge student population. You've got a basketball program that's probably, you know, top 15.
Yeah. Well, maybe. But I think what you got to realize is, from a football standpoint, that
let's not forget the draw that UK basketball can have, even if you're not a basketball player, though.
Well, I understand that. What I'm saying is that from a football standpoint, you spend more on Midnight Madness than you do on your recruiting budget for football. And so when that happens, it's just, you're limited, and it's just the priority. I mean, it's just what the state is. I mean, it's what makes Kentucky, Kentucky.
Well, that goes back to revenue generation. I mean, if you look at the top 15 programs in revenue generation in the United States, you've got Alabama, you've got Texas, you've got USC, And Kentucky is way up there. They're not, I think they're in the top 10 last time I looked. And if you look at the balance of power, what football brings versus what basketball brings, Kentucky is only there because its basketball brings so much money to that. And it's night and day difference compared. I mean, there's three programs that possibly can compete on the basketball level as far as revenue generation, and that's Kentucky, Duke, and North Carolina. And they make a profit that can support the football program, whereas all those other programs in the top 10, if you look at them, it's because they have a football program that makes so much money. And so why wouldn't they have to spend more money on Midnight Madness? It's what's that's their bread and butter. It's what's paying the bills. I mean, it's what's keeping the lights on.
I understand, but what I'm going to tell you is there's no way that your basketball program is going to make more than $20 million that you get at Destin every year from your football being part of the SEC.
I'd have to go back and research and pull up that report, but it does. Kentucky basketball made more than their football.
And I'd like to see that.
When you take into all the consideration of the jerseys and all the other endorsement deals and things that Kentucky basketball generates as far as revenue, it brings in more money.
Then why are y'all looking for a football coach?
We got to have football to be in the SEC.
And we've got
the money to spend.
I hear you. Well, what do y'all think about the Arkansas side of things?
You can take out any of the four names and insert. It's the same scenario. Yeah. I think it's the same pool of coaches that you need to be looking at.
I think Tennessee. I think if you got Auburn, Arkansas, and Kentucky sitting there, I think Tennessee is well above any of those other three. I think the Arkansas job has just gotten even harder. With the additions of the two members of the SEC, you know, Arkansas,
especially A&M.
Yeah, the A&M and the Missouri, you know, Arkansas could go into St. Louis or they could go into Texas and really go after those athletes. It makes it difficult with those two schools coming in and, you know, getting people to Fayetteville. You know, Bobby Petrino never really had big recruiting classes. He didn't have those big, heavy 4- and 5-star. He just was a great developer and a great offensive mind that was perfect for Arkansas, and he screwed it up. But I think Arkansas has a lot of money, you know, but I think any of the schools have a lot of money.
They get that nice little check at Destin, and they've got boosters that have big pockets.
I really don't see a big guy going to Arkansas.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's rank those four. Britton, I'll let you start. Who best program of the four?
I think I would agree with Blair that Tennessee is kind of a not head and shoulders above, but at least maybe head above the other three.
I would give you that. I think if you look at everything being equal and the same coach had the opportunity to go to all four schools, Tennessee's ranked number one.
Yeah.
What about number two?
I think you got to go Auburn. Now, I don't know. I mean, I'm talking about program-wise. So I'm talking about facilities, school, you know, recruiting base, all that type of stuff.
But let's talk about the news that came out today. Does that change things at Auburn?
That changes a lot of things at Auburn.
Changes the caliber of coach that's going to be interested in going there, that's for sure. And I also think with Auburn.
And let's bring some people up to speed. We're just throwing something in the left field there. So there's a report from Yahoo, is that correct?
Yeah, Yahoo came out today that there's investigations, which has kind of been rumored for the last couple of months.
For years, since Cam Newton went there.
Exactly. But this obviously stemming from the whole Memphis thing with regards to the Robinson kid that was ruled ineligible at the beginning of the year that had his name grade changed at the Memphis High School. But it was to the point where Trooper Taylor – And Britton, you can help me with the recruiting
Looper,
have been taken off the road as of like 3 or 4 weeks ago from recruiting. Yeah. So they are specifically with them. It's to do with the, you know, Memphis stuff, and they've been interviewed this week. And, you know, Chizik has kind of danced around it as much as he can. But You know, there was rumblings in the last couple of weeks, Shane. I think we even talked about it, or maybe we did and I wasn't on. But you know, there's been a lot of rumblings the last couple of weeks that Chizik may survive this thing, you know. And, you know, because they've got the issues with Jay Jacobs as the AD possibly being ousted. And you got Gooch or whatever his name is, the president, that, you know, basically has kind of taken over the decision-making with regards to the decision and saying he's going to kind of wait till the end of the year to evaluate. So there's a lot of things going on. And if, you know, it's big stuff. And the problem that you have, if you're an Auburn fan, is Yahoo hasn't missed one yet. And when Yahoo gets into it, buddy, it is over. Yeah. And so that creates a lot of issues. Especially, you know, if you're going to have to let somebody go, you're dealing with an Alabama in the state that's just dominating everything. That job just gets a lot tougher.
So, Brenton, I'll throw this scenario out and let you answer. So, based on that information and what we've just talked about, do you possibly see a scenario where we're now talking about three programs like Blair alluded to, because there's going to be so much collateral damage that's going to fall out from this Yahoo thing that there's not going to be a coach worthy of going to Auburn is going to take a chance to go there. So they're going to keep Chizik and let him rebuild a whole new assistance, all new assistants under him and clean house underneath?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Like Blair said, you kind of started to hear some of the rumblings that maybe he's going to survive, but I just don't know. If some of this or any of this, all of this turns out to be true, when you combine that with the terrible product on the field, I don't know if you can keep them, even though you might be scaring away candidates with, you know, looming sanctions.
Now, could you bring Malzahn back?
Well, let me add this, Shane, and I didn't mention this, but there are reports that if he is in violation, if they have broken any NCAA rules and it may basically come down with anything –
his contract?
It null and voids his buyout, yep. $7.5 million. So there's a $10 million windfall for them to actually get some answers. Right. And it's in Auburn's best interest to make sure they're working with the NCAA and doing things kind of up. So that's why this has kind of picked up steam, because I think in the last month they've kind of seen a possible out where you can get rid of Chizik, not have to pay the buyout, and now you can turn around and take that money.
And it's also interesting there. If you know, if Chizik feels like maybe he's been slighted because Auburn finds a way to sort of pin this on him and he doesn't get his buyout, and if he does know that there are some skeletons in the closet, he might be a little more inclined to shed some light on some of those skeletons too. So, I mean, there, just any way you look at this right now for Auburn, it's bad.
So there's a bloodbath down at Auburn, possibly, in all directions.
Yeah. That's what I see and am praying for nightly.
All right, so let's go back to the rank in the four. Can you give Auburn number two with all of that looming out there?
Well, and another thing Blair touched on a little bit, but I think there is a significant fear factor of Alabama right now. I mean, Auburn is always going to be little brother in the state, but the way that it's rolling at Alabama too, I think that a young up-and-coming coach might look at that job and then look at the Arkansas job and say, at least in Arkansas, I'm the big dog. You know, I'm not second fiddle when I walk out the front door in Arkansas. And I think that's a factor too. So I agree that facilities-wise and recruiting base, Auburn is second. But I don't know that the way things just stand right now and all the other stuff we've talked about, I think a case could easily be made that Arkansas might be ahead of them.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument that Auburn jumped early on the Tuberville ousting because they saw Nick Saban building the program and probably made a decision too early, got into the coaching search, had to settle on a Gene Chizik who's 5-19, you know, the whole stuff with Buffalo coach who – ended up not doing very well at his stop. I'm drawing a blank.
But Turner Gill.
Yeah, Turner Gill. And really what you have now is, you know, do you find that young guy that goes in there and goes, you know what, this is my opportunity to be able to say, hey, let me go in and see if I can't rattle some cages type of deal. That's what you're going to need. the thing that Auburn can do, especially if they get the buyout, is that they can actually pay the money. They do have the facilities. They are in a better recruiting base. And so they can kind of make some noise, especially when you get an Alabama team that gets 5, 6, 7, 8 years into a Nick Saban, where Nick Saban is really, he's really just choosing his 25 players. So at some point, there comes a diminishing returns from the standpoint of a kid that's number 30 is kind of pissed off that he's not even looked at.
Right.
And now he can go to an all, you know, so there's different ways of actually looking at it. I think the Arkansas job to me is a very difficult job. Number one, I think it's gotten even more difficult with Missouri and Texas A&M coming in, and especially with Texas A&M splashing the way they've done. But I think both of them are going to be tough jobs. I mean, the scenario that they're looking at, you've got investigations, you've got, you know, just issues across the board at both institutions that you're going to have to do a major repair job.
That's why I think Kentucky's number two.
You know, I mean, in Kentucky, I mean, it's the, you know, Kentucky is, you know, I think Kentucky is a job where you can get somebody in there that can kind of do the basketball and grass. You know, it's the, hey, let's get the offense rolling. You make it exciting.
Get that mummy ball. Get that mummy ball back there without the sanctions.
Right. I mean, I think that's what you got to do, and you just got to do it the right way. And, you know, and I think somebody can do that. I mean, if, I mean, it's interesting. It's a shame that a guy as good as Joker Phillips, and as good as he's handled this whole thing, and the way, and you could tell the way Mitch Barnhart, and obviously the respect he has for him, you hate that that guy couldn't get it done. And he was a part of a lot of the stuff that happened there when they were good as a coordinator. But, you know, and it really, you really hate that he didn't have players,
yes.
Especially, you know, he had players there and they were going to struggle, but for them to just get annihilated with injuries to just kind of, you know, then you have 20,000 people show up. I mean, it just, that seals your fate, you know?
Yeah, he was sitting there saying no whammies, no whammies, and every time he, you know, hit that button, they kept popping up, blowing things up, and that,
yeah,
it's just the way that went for him. I think we've hit the coaching thing pretty well, but you know, I mean, it's a big part of what's going on here, and I think the reason Britton wanted on, and we'll give him his due right here, is that, you know, we'll talk a little bit outside the SEC, and I think you alluded to it. Way, you know, a good 40 minutes ago into the podcast now, maybe, when we were talking about that Tennessee game, that you didn't watch much of it because you were busy watching another game or two. And you know, the whole BCS scenario that everybody was not wanting to happen is kind of opened its head. And you know, I'm going to just go on out there, and then I'll pass it over to you. I don't know if Notre Dame's still not got a tough chance to lose tomorrow. Or Saturday, and now we're right back at with SEC and 1 and 2 headed into Georgia.
Yeah, and wouldn't that just piss the rest of the country off? I mean, the rest of the country, who probably hates Notre Dame most of the time, is so much for Notre Dame right now that it's unbelievable. I mean, it would just make everyone sick to have to watch the SEC play again. But, yeah, I mean, this weekend was unbelievable.
Jews and Christians rooting for the Catholics.
I never thought that it was basically the exact same thing as last year. Not quite as many variables had to come up for Alabama for it to go the same way. But, you know, still you felt like when they lost to A&M, you felt like there's no way Oregon's losing just the way that they've been rolling. And I did kind of think that Kansas State was a pretender, kind of a one-man team, and thought that there might be some problems. But you thought that problem was going to come from Texas, not from Baylor. And then for both games to be going on at the same time, and for Stanford, who just looks like a so much more athletic team right now than they have in the past, that was crazy. I was celebrating like Alabama had won a game.
I mean, it was. I mean, you tell me this, Britton. I mean, watching that Stanford defensive line, that front seven. I mean, that was just amazing, dude. Oregon couldn't do anything. And the thing about it was, you know, that's the one thing that that's the one thing that I think Alabama, if you can poke at a weakness, is their front four getting pressure or being able to actually get upfield and do that. I mean, they're solid, but they don't have those ends that are sacking guys and throwing you all over the place. Those right. Stanford guys, man, those two defensive ends, those they guys were just annihilated.
Yeah, they were in the backfield every play, and that you didn't see those just enormous rush lanes that you see when Oregon plays, where DeAnthony Thomas and Barner are just like there's no one within 5 yards of them. I mean, that front four for Stanford was and coming into the game, which I didn't even know until I started watching the game, but they were first in rushing yards per game, tackles for loss, sacks. I mean, they were first in basically every major defensive line statistical category, which no one over here knows that because we don't watch Stanford play that often. But they were the real deal, and Oregon, when you no matter what how good your offense is or what kind of offense you run, when you've got defensive tackles in the backfield on the snap, that you're going to struggle, and that's exactly what was happening.
And like you, I was flipping between the three games, but you know, the one thing that was worrying me for a minute, and you know, as an SEC fan, we're rooting for all these programs to lose, like Oregon and Kansas State. But, you know, there for a while, it looked like the refs were trying to do everything they could to keep Stanford from winning that game. So I'm glad it did turn out that they had the opportunity there in overtime to pull that game out. I'd have to go back and listen to the podcast, but there's losses that were going to be out there still from these three teams, talking about Kansas State, Oregon, and Notre Dame. I wasn't expecting it last week.
Right.
Actually, the one I was thinking was maybe Notre Dame, and they rolled.
Yeah. Right. Well, the Oregon had three really tough games. I mean, they got to go to Oregon State this weekend, and then they've got to get a UCLA team now that – you know, that took USC, yeah.
Let's wait. Let's back up a second. And I know we're not a Pac-12 podcast, but, you know, realistically, I think there's a good chance that they're not even playing the Pac-12 championship game because Stanford has to do is beat UCLA, and now they turn around and play each other again the following week. So it could be 2 weeks in a row where you have UCLA-Stanford because UCLA beating USC last week sealed the deal for USC to be out of there. Now you've got and after that, you're going to have an emotional letdown for both programs. So they're on somewhat of a level field, but I think Stanford's a little more talented than UCLA. So now you're going to have those guys go in, beat UCLA, turn around, and lose again to UCLA the following week.
Yeah.
That's the way you could see this flip-flop back and forth out there in the Pac-12. So it's all messed up out there. And that doesn't help Oregon out for them not to play in the championship game because they need that extra win to help move them up a little bit. And so they're going to definitely be on the outside looking in.
It could be interesting if everything were to fall right, you could have, and if Notre Dame were to lose, Florida State beat Florida, obviously either Alabama or Georgia is going to lose. You could have this situation where maybe Oregon, because of the BCS, winds up being number two in the BCS without having played in their conference championship. Yeah,
like Alabama last year.
Yeah, and it could shake out that way. A lot of factors would have to fall right, but it would be really interesting to see if that were to happen, if there would be an outrage that there was this year or last year with the two SEC.
I'd almost rather see that than Florida beat Florida State and then them have to play in the BCS championship game.
Florida State or Florida, yeah.
Florida, yeah. I would hate that. Yeah, Florida State – their loss earlier in the season to NC State kind of put them too far back to be able to catch up in ground, even though that's their only loss.
Yeah.
A bad loss, though.
Yeah, I mean, to a bad team on top of
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Stanford like a 19-point underdog or something?
Yeah,
something
it was three scores.
Yeah, it was three scores. And then, of course, Kansas State was a large – favorite going into Baylor.
They,
you know,
they were at least two touchdowns.
Yeah, and the thing that's crazy about that, guys, is that it's just what this BCS system does to you. When you start getting into that 10-0, 11-0 the last two games, it's the pressure. I mean, you could tell from Kansas, especially a Kansas State team that's not used to being 10-0.
Right.
Or 11-0. It's just that grind that gets to you. I think it becomes a burden. Football doesn't really become fun. You're practicing, you're beating yourself up every week. And you could just kind of tell that. And so it's interesting how this all works out. And I think for Notre Dame, I think that's what gives people a sense of, hey, you know, this kid that's backing up Barkley is, you know, by a lot of people says that he could be better than Barkley by the time he leaves, but he's kind of an all or nothing guy right now. And so there's going to be plays where he's going to make you go, whoa. And that may be good or it may be bad. So you don't know what guy you're getting. But if he's on, then they could be in trouble.
And you got to think, that's another guy that's coaching for his job, possibly, is Lane Kiffin out there. He's going to be throwing everything he's got at him.
Which is crazy. To me, it's crazy to think that he's really coaching for his job.
Well, see, I thought Hayden
fell down this year. But
I mean, you got to think.
I thought Hayden actually backed him.
He did.
This past week.
You know how that, you know, sometimes that gets to death.
Yeah.
Mitch Barnhart was backing Joker a couple weeks ago, too.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, because, yeah, that was a big loss for USC. I know we're talking about the Pac-12, but
it impacts Alabama, so it's got some say in the SEC. But you're right. I mean, you know, what are they?
Hey, Shane, I mean, you know, we were just talking about, you know, what a coaching change can do for you. You know, you take a bunch of kids that have done nothing, and then you can change their mentality. What's Jim Moore Jr. done? I mean, he took that UCLA team.
Yeah, they had quite a job.
I mean, they haven't even sniffed that game since 98, and they just went out there and just wore them out.
And Neuheisel, I mean, they didn't bring a lot of different players in that Neuheisel didn't already have there at UCLA, did they not?
Yeah. I mean, that was basically
his team, correct?
That's right. I mean, Neuheisel, he was still doing his basketball pool.
That's going all the way back to Washington, wasn't it?
It was a poor humor. I apologize.
That's
okay.
But I mean, were they set? USC 7-5, right? No,
7-4.
They could go to 7-5. But you know, you're talking about a team in some polls were preseason number one, and there was one poll out there had them as the number one team in the country coming off of probation. And that's the thing that we forget about with USC is they were pretty good last year, except they're like Ohio State this year. They were on probation. They didn't get on TV a lot. It didn't matter how well they did. They weren't going to a bowl game. So they were basically coming in to surprise everybody about how good they were, and they really weren't as good as we thought they were.
The other thing is that this is just the first year of the scholarship reduction, so they got two more classes. So they got, you know, they can only sign 15. So when you get 3 years down the road, you're going to be dealing with 15 less scholarships than everybody else or 30 less scholarships than everybody else. So that hadn't even impacted them.
And if Lane Kiffin goes, you know, I don't think there's a lot of people that are going to look to hire him.
I can't, maybe as a coordinator, but I can't think he's.
So there's, but that's another primo position that might be opening up that would compete against some of the SEC positions, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think they're hooked to him.
At least one more year.
Yeah.
Who knows? But it's going to be crazy. I'd say that because I don't know if Notre Dame's got it in them. You know, they've had some. They're going to have a lot of pressure on them coming into USC to South California, Southern California. Listen,
that too.
Yeah, one of those West Coast things. But you know, they're fighting.
I would say,
go on.
USC, even with their backup quarterback, USC is still better than Pitt, right? And Pitt should have beaten Notre Dame.
Should have.
Notre Dame could definitely stumble this week.
And so, you know, you look at that and look at how that shakes out. You know, three of the top four teams in the BCS are SEC programs, number two, three, and four. You know, two of those programs are going to have to play each other next week. I don't think either one of those, Alabama or Georgia, are going to have an issue this week against Georgia Tech and Auburn in the Iron Bowl. So you're going to look at one of those programs, regardless, is going to go to the national championship game. It just, who is number two? And that's what we all have to figure out now. Because I'm going to give Notre Dame their loss this week.
Oh, you're calling your shot, huh?
I am.
Wow.
Some people would say book it.
That's funny.
You know, the touchdown Jesus isn't going to be there to save him. you can only squeak by so many times, though. And you mentioned it. They should have lost a Pitt. And you watch some of the – I've not watched every Notre Dame game, but it seems like they found a way to win a bunch of games that they probably deserved to lose. And you're coming up against a program that at one time was ranked number one in the country, that's got a ton of talent, that has nothing to lose and everything to gain by playing them, because they're not going to the Rose Bowl. They're going to be at a mid-level bowl game as it is at 7-5. You know, this is USC's bowl game in their eyes. And so I don't know. There's too many things against Notre Dame for me to say that. And so that's going to just cause all kinds of chaos in the BCS. Then, like you said, though, we've got one more week of championship games, and it could be that all these teams lose against each other in the championship games, and a non-championship opponent sneaks into that number two spot. And, you know, that Florida or Oregon-type program.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be crazy. So, do we want to talk about this, the Iron Bowl, Britton? Are you?
We certainly can. I mean, I don't know that we need to spend a ton of time on it. It's 31.5 point spread. I don't know that they'll cover the spread just because it's Auburn, but man, Auburn's really bad, so maybe they will. But,
dude, I mean, seriously, does Nick Saban think about, like, you know, it's like game 16 in the NFL, like week 17, and you're just going to rest them for the playoffs?
That would be awesome if he did.
No, I think I think Auburn is just, you know, they're there. I think once they get their first hit, they're laying down.
They're kind of like the Royals in baseball every year around game 100. They're just ready to start playing golf. I think that's where Auburn is right now. Yeah. They've been done for a while, and they're just ready for this season to be over.
There's no way they can win. So even if they play competitive, it doesn't make them any better of a program.
So, right.
The other game, though, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, that's going to be a good game. There's a lot on the line for both programs.
Yes. You know,
a lot of records are in play for you over there in Mississippi State. What, most wins in a three-year span if they win this week and then a bowl game? Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we got the bowl game, but it would be 9 wins if we win in the regular season with an opportunity to get to 10 wins, which I think has only happened. I think we've only done 10 wins 4 times in our history and never done it in the regular season. So it's a big game, and more importantly, it would be 4 in a row for Mullen, which would be, on Mississippi State side of things, would be the first time since World War II that we won 4 in a row in this series, and first time that either one of the schools has won 4 in a row since the early 80s. So it's been a pretty competitive rivalry. You know, and it's a neighbor-to-neighbor thing. It's kind of like the Auburn-Alabama. You know, there's not many of them. You know, it's not a – you know, you have a lot of those. That's the Florida-Florida State, or you got the, you know,
South Carolina-Clemson.
You got this, you know, you got LSU, Arkansas, but I mean, I think the South Carolina, Clemson's, the Auburn, the Alabama's, the Mississippi State, you know, Ole Miss, that are neighbor to neighbor. You can't get around it. It's, you know, you got Louisville, Kentucky.
We got Kentucky, Tennessee. Now we hold the record.
You know, the thing.
You calling a shot there too?
Yeah. That's right. Well, I've only got another couple days left, possibly.
I think you're right, but. You know, it's a part of I think, you know, I think if we're like Ole Miss is a 1-point favorite. I think it started out as a pick 'em, and they're leaning towards that. And you know, I think it's an opportunity for them to be bowl eligible, so they're going to be playing. And then obviously Hugh Freeze knows the importance of the game growing up in Mississippi. So, you know, it's one of those things where Dan Mullen has laid kind of his cards on the table and. Stoke the fire of this rivalry and kind of lay the gauntlet down that it's important. It's a different week. They play the game differently. They prepare for the game differently. They talk about the game differently. They do everything. It's the most important thing. And that's really rallied the fan base. And so I'm anxious to do it. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I talked to my Ole Miss friends, so you know, they were all worried about us basically saying, hey, you know, you've lost 3 in a row. Do you think your confidence is going to be struck? You're going to have a hard time against Arkansas. they've lost three in a row. You know, what are they going to say if we end up beating them and you've lost four in a row and don't get to go to a bowl because of us? So there's a lot on the line, and it's just kind of work in the process of mulling, of trying to dominate the state and make it, make it the place where Mississippi State is the dominant team. And that's difficult to do in our state right now.
Yeah, no, it's a program of the interstate rivalries. It's SEC opponents. That's probably the one that's got the most on the line to play for. I joked about the Kentucky Tennessee game, and that could go any which way right now.
Yeah, that would. I don't know how. I would never bet on that one just because of all the chaos.
You know, the crazy thing about that is I heard, like, a couple of guys were like, man, Tennessee's just going to wear them out. And I'm like, Tennessee hasn't worn anybody out.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's just like, you know, I mean, I'm just sitting there going, how do you know they're going to wear them out? Like, yeah, they're embarrassed that they did that last year. They could give a rat's, you know what, right yeah. now. They don't even want to be practicing.
Yeah, and Kentucky, I mean, just like last year, I mean, Tennessee's not going to go to a bowl game. So, you know, they have that going for them. They don't have their head coach playing. Kentucky at least has their coach that's going to finish out the season. They've got somebody that, I mean, those guys really like Joker. You know, so they don't want to lose. So they want to play hard for Joker. Tennessee doesn't have that. So, I mean, you know, you've got that can go a long way for guys, especially knowing that they've got a shot to go down to Tennessee to beat Tennessee at Knoxville. That hadn't happened in God knows when.
To add this, Shane, just imagine this. If Kentucky beats Tennessee, Joker Phillips will be above – he'll have a winning record against Tennessee, and he'll be fired.
Interesting.
How bad is Tennessee?
Well, and when's the last time you've had a coach that has two wins against Tennessee from Kentucky?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He will have a winning record against UT when you didn't win a game for 26 years. So he's going to have a two-win streak if he wins. He's going to be fired after 3 years. That just tells me how barren the state of Tennessee and Tennessee football, I mean, just how bad it's gotten. I mean, when Kentucky's firing their coach and they still whip you 2 out of 3 years, I mean – in 1 year with a freaking wide receiver.
Well, Kentucky doesn't have the win yet, but I'm definitely going to be sporting the Kentucky blue this weekend and raising a glass, cheering on my Wildcats.
What time is the Ole Miss Mississippi State game?
6 o'clock.
On Saturday or Friday?
Yeah, Saturday. It's ESPNU.
Friday, the only game is LSU-Arkansas.
Is that the only one?
Okay. Yeah. Because the Egg Bowl used to be on Thursday, did it not?
Yeah, they ran it Thursday night for about 6 years in a row when we were actually good, both of us.
And now the NFL's putting that third turkey game on too, so that hurts those ratings. But, you know, the other games, like we said, Georgia Tech, Georgia Tech's a two-score underdog right now, but I don't see Georgia having much of an issue with those guys. Do you?
Yeah, no. Especially they played, I think, Georgia Southern, who does basically the triple option as well. Whoever they played last week runs the triple option, so it's kind of like a.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's kind of like a preview. That. Yeah.
So it really was a scrimmage.
It really was.
That's
so
interesting.
So it sets up. Yeah, and this is not a.
Yeah. I'm excited that Georgia is having to play a triple option team the week before the SEC championship, just because it's that much more you have to concentrate on defending that style of offense as opposed to maybe peeking ahead a little to us. But I don't think they're going to have any problem.
Probably the most inflated rating is Florida playing Florida State. Would you say that? I mean, look what they did. Who'd they have? Jacksonville State last week? And they struggled for a long time with that. And the week before that was it Lafayette?
Yeah, I think Florida State's beating them, man.
What's the spread?
Florida State by 8.
And it's in Tallahassee.
It's at yes.
And yeah, I just think Florida can't score right now. But that defense is legit. I mean, it's top 5 for sure. But I just don't I don't know if they can score to beat Florida State.
Yeah, Florida State's problem is Florida State is, I mean, they got top five talent, man. And they had the one night that you can't have against NC State, and they've beaten everybody else. I mean, they got a great defense, and they got, I think Florida State is out because, I mean, there's some computer. I mean, they're a one-loss team, and there are some computers that don't even have them in the top 15, which is just insane to me. And so the ACC, they're just getting obliterated. So yeah, they're just getting obliterated in this polls and this BCS thing that I think it's kind of – I think it's a little bit of a chip on their shoulder that they want to kind of prove with Florida. And I think if Driscoll's not ready to play, I mean, it just makes it more difficult.
You know, that's another rat hole that you bring up that we never even discussed. But, you know, what about the moves this week that's also been announced in the ACC and Big East? Do you see that that's opening the door again for talk for two more teams coming over to the SEC? Because you see the super conferences, it's happening. The big, you know, the Big 12 got a couple more folks this week. It was a Big 10.
Yeah,
Big 10. Yeah,
but the Big 10 already had 12, right?
Yeah, so it makes them 14. So it makes them even worse at math.
how are they going to make that logo look right now?
Yeah, exactly. So. I think we kind of saw it coming. I thought it was very pro. I thought it was a great way for the Big Ten to get in the news when their teams are terrible. I mean, really, it was. And I mean, if you're Maryland and if you're Rutgers, you're hauling tail. I'm interested to see if the $50 million buyout is going to be.
Uphill.
How much they're in? I wonder if they're how much they're going to have to pay, and that's really going to distinguish a lot of things, I think, going forward. But yeah, I think things are going to keep moving that way. And guys, I mean, just take an instance of this. I mean, Shane, and I don't know if y'all talked about this, but you know, the Champions Bowl, which now is the Sugar Bowl, which is the first conference affiliated bowl game between the SEC and the Big 12. It's basically the Rose Bowl in the South, except you don't have a nonprofit entity that's actually taking all the money, and you're getting two conferences that are guaranteed $80 million when they start that in 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's $160 million. Today we actually see that the ESPN gets a 12-year contract for the new playoff system, which, you know, all your presidents and everybody talked about there was not more money in a playoff, right?
Right.
Yeah. $500 million today. $500 million, and you're gonna. I mean, it's just everything's proven wrong. So, I think that's where you're seeing. You know, like in
it wasn't proven wrong. It's just everything they say has been proven wrong. We all thought there was lots of money out there
the
for this.
The line was proven wrong, basically.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just ridiculous, and you know, and that goes back to Tennessee and their coaching search. You know, you see the president or chancellor yesterday. Basically say, hey, we're going to give back, you know, to the athletic department $6 million a year for the next 3 years and give them $18 million because they know in 3 years that all
they're
of a sudden,
the
$20 million cut they were getting is now going to be, I mean, you're going to be splitting $80 million from one game between everybody in the league.
Between 16 teams at that point, right?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? But it doesn't – it's one of those things. And then you throw in the SEC network, which is going to happen. It's just, you know, it's the thing where they just got to work it out as a base cable thing. But when they work out the SEC network, you know, which I think is going to happen with the playoff, and we're going to see that in the next couple of years, you're talking about just bukoodles of money where I think the Big Ten and the SEC are just going to try to – create a Grand Canyon between everybody else when it comes to revenue.
Now, with all this shakeout, where does that leave the Big East? I mean, because some
and
of
the ACC,
the Big East is going to be
how
the
many?
Big East.
How many teams are going to be left? Because TCU's now not coming to the Big East, right?
I'll tell you this, Shane. It goes back to your conversation with regards to basketball revenue. The Big East is basically a basketball. They're a basketball conference, number one, and they can't do anything because basketball doesn't create any revenue whatsoever, even on the large scale, even the big schools compared to what is being generated from the football. Because when you go to look at your Kentucky budget, I guarantee you're going to go down there and look at Destin and go, I get $21 million for being in the SEC, and my budget is whatever it is. I mean, your budget's got to be, what, $60 million, $65
million? I would even think that's a third of it.
And that's just bowl money. You know, it's just it's one of those things where the money that we're going to see, and I think that's what you're seeing. I think that's what I see at a school like Mississippi State and Ole Miss, for instance, where you're dealing with $50 million budgets. You know, 5 years ago, they were $30 million budgets. 5 years from now, they're going to be $80 million budgets because, I mean, Mississippi State's running on a budget that's $50 million and they're getting a $21 million check last year. I mean, that's 40-45% of their budget. So being part of the SEC is this revenue thing is fixing to get a little bit out of whack. And you know, the Big Ten Network guys, I mean, the guy in Illinois is not getting mad when he can't see Illinois and Purdue. The guy in Alabama would shoot somebody. So you can't do the SEC. True. Yeah, you can't do the SEC network like the Big Ten did the Big Ten network. That's why they have the package with ESPN, and they're going to end up working out their own network, but they've got to do it accordingly because the SEC would literally create riots in the states right. if they can't right. see their football. So it's going to be interesting. I think that's, you know, this is totally off, kind of got off on a tangent, but I mean, that's one of those things. I mean, where you're talking about all of a sudden conferences that are actually doing the bowls. Because, I mean, you could tell, I mean, the Fiesta thing was a total sham. I mean, this nonprofit right. stuff, you know, I mean, we live here in Nashville, so you got the Music City Bowl, and, you know, they're generating revenue for, you know, city and the economic boost and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, what happens when the conferences start just doing their own bowls? I mean, that's just genius.
All right, real quick here. Kentucky made $31,000 in revenue off of football. Their total revenue has them in the top 20 of all programs combined, and it was almost $85 million.
$85 million. All right.
Total of that $31,000 was football.
Wow. $31,000 that you made.
Yes, not profit, revenue.
Well, most athletic budgets don't actually make money. They're mostly, you know, like Alabama has $80 million.
Most companies don't make money. I mean, when you look at the tax returns, but they're making money. Let's be real.
No, I'm talking about it's set up from a revenue standpoint to actually spend the money that they're actually making from a revenue standpoint. What I'm talking about is that when you actually look at when you break down the revenues, if you're at $85 million, how many of the $85 million is being allocated towards basketball? Which, at Kentucky, it's going to be totally skewed compared to anybody else because basketball is what you are.
Yeah.
Right?
But my whole thing earlier was that most of their revenue has them in the top 20, and it comes from basketball. And that's the case. They're that high up in the list. And it's because their basketball program brings in so much revenue. But it pales in comparison to the total revenue of UT, of Texas, at, you know, $93 million.
Yeah, or Alabama that's at 110 or whatever they are.
Yeah, I mean, University of Texas made $93 million, almost $94 million in their football program alone. Mm-hmm. Total, when you take everything into account with Texas, it's $150 million. So, you know, almost 40% of what, 60% of what Kentucky's total revenue was. That just shows how much money there is in football.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Because, I mean, that's got to take into account some of the UT network down in with their deal with ESPN.
Right.
But, you know, we talked about this last year about, you know, how the super conferences were going to happen. And I always thought there were going to be six, but, you know, where's that six going to come from now? Because you always thought the Big East was going to be able to survive, but I don't know if they will. You know,
I don't know.
No, I think he'll end up with
survive either. I mean, yeah, you look at schools like Florida State have got to be freaking out right now for what we just talked about, this, the conference is perceived as being so weak, even a one-loss team can't break the top 10.
They're begging.
It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse.
They're behind closed doors begging Florida to say, please vote yes. Please vote yes.
Well, the other thing that you're talking about, Shane, is take a school like Louisville. I mean, Louisville's in the Big East, and the problem that Louisville has is that they're kind of in no man's land because – They don't have the households because all this is generated, you know, it's the whole thing with regards to Maryland and New Jersey. You're getting New York and New Jersey. You were getting Washington, D.C. And if y'all, I don't know if y'all seen the numbers of that stuff, but if you're the Big Ten Network, they get 3 cents per user on states so a user that has the Big Ten Network that's outside of the states that actually have one of the schools.
Like Tennessee.
Right.
Because we have the Big Ten Network available.
Right. So, but if the states that actually have it where they have a university or an institution, it's 22 cents. So you're talking about, what is that, seven plus times?
Yeah.
And so now all of a sudden you get New York or New Jersey and Washington, D.C. Holy cow. I mean, if there's 8 million people that have access to that, then all of a sudden you've just made.
You have 8 million people on the city of New York.
I know.
Not even counting the whole state.
Yeah. I mean, but just to say, I mean, if you have a million of them, that's
8 million people really want to watch Big Ten football, though.
It's true.
The kicker, though, is that, you know, you pay for the premium sports package, it's included. So whether you're watching it or not, the Big Ten's still getting that revenue.
Right.
Because it's total eyeballs that have that package. And so that's, you know, that's where you get somebody that's on the fence, that's a football fan. It's like, well, if I pay the extra $5 a month, I get the Big Ten channel, the University of Texas channel, and all these other channels that are available to me. And that's where, even if I'm not watching a Big Ten game, they're still shelling out the extra, you know, 19, 20 cents an eyeball.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things that without the football, especially in the Big East, the basketball is not going to survive. With regards to what you're going to do from a super conference standpoint, it's going to be interesting from that standpoint. It's going to be something to follow over the next 3 years, that's for sure.
Well, guys, let's kind of wrap this up. We've been down some rat holes and talked about a lot of different things, a lot of topics, and we appreciate everybody that might still be listening. If you do listen to the podcast and have stumbled upon this and you're still a loyal listener and you're at an hour and 20 minutes still listening strong, thank you so much. Subscribe to us on iTunes. I've been bragging, and apparently somebody got mad at that because at one time we were the number one podcast if you search for SEC Sports. But now some of the big players, ESPN, CBS, have bumped us down to number three. So, you know, a small podcast in the living room kitchen area of a guy's house, still being the number three podcast on iTunes on SEC Sports. It's not a bad thing. I'll take it. But thank you, guys. Subscribe. Write us a review. Tell us what you like. You can send us an email if you like. I never throw that out, but we do have an email address. It's comments@secsportsroundtable.com. And that is the website address. All of our podcasts, our videos, sometimes an occasional blog is all posted up there on the website. So feel free to go out there, check out the website or the YouTube channel. That's where this video version is. We do a Google Hangout of the podcast, and you can catch that shortly after we get through recording on YouTube at the SEC SRT channel. But it's that time of the podcast where we have an open mic, and Blair, it will let you kick it off and tell folks how they can get a hold of you, anything else you want to talk about, and then we'll throw it to Britton.
At Blair Smiley, so that's BlairSmyly, is the Twitter handle. Not much activity there, more of a follower, but now I'm looking forward to going to Kentucky for the next 4 days with the in-laws, and so gonna go enjoy a little Thanksgiving and try not to scream obscenities at the TV on Saturday at 6 o'clock. So So hoping my Bulldogs pull it through. We'll see how it happens.
And you're turning into a bootlegger this weekend, are you not?
I am. I am supplying alcohol.
So, one of the many fun facts about Kentucky is there is a ton of dry counties, just like Tennessee for that matter. So you've got to know where to stop and when to pick up your stash, because otherwise you're SOL, so to speak.
Yeah, and the in-laws aren't. They're not real big drinkers. So so the brother-in-law from Tampa, he's coming in. So I'll become his new best friend when I roll in with a cooler. So he'll be excited.
Britton, how about you? Anything you want to throw out there?
Yeah, well, that's funny. I got the trying to not swear with around your in-laws during rivalry game weekend. As someone who's been married about a year and a half, I experienced that for the first time last year. So good luck with that. But you can follow me at BCBurton13 on Twitter. I tweet a lot about Alabama, so if you don't want to hear about Alabama, you might not want to. Nothing much. Just happy Thanksgiving and Roll Tide. Beat the hell out of Auburn.
There we go. All right, you can find me at PShaneBailey. That's my Twitter. I'll just second what you guys have said. It is a fun time for rivalry week. I know that as a Kentucky fan, we've not had a whole lot to cheer about most of my entire life. But, we're going for two in a row this weekend, so I'm really excited about that. I think there's a better than good chance that can happen. Like yourselves, I want to wish everyone out there listening a happy Thanksgiving. Be safe out on those roads. So supposed to have some wet weather around a lot of the country. And so just take the extra time and be a little considerate and realize that everybody's all trying to get to the same place, and it's probably someplace they don't want to be. So let's all show a little patience out there. And with that, guys, we're going to call this podcast done.